Thanks for coming, everybody. It's really exciting. I'm going to be presenting work that represents a group effort by my co-authors, Damien Larry, who's a developer and a student in the MPH program at the University of Pennsylvania, where I am, and John Holmes, who's a health information technology person, human factors person. In our university as well, and I failed to put on here the Spirit and the Circle for Moms participatory design groups whose work we're really going to be talking about. So just to outline what I'll be presenting, I'll start out by saying that none of the authors have any relationships to disclose. I'll be reviewing perinatal depression because, as you noted from my title, I didn't repeat my title, but maybe I should say quickly that I'm going to be talking about our work with participatory design of mHealth interventions to address obstacles to care for perinatal depression. We'll be talking a little bit about what perinatal depression is, the prevalence in care models, evidence-based models that we're trying to support, mHealth, what exactly is mHealth, and participatory design, how does that work both from the traditions of health and public health, and as it turns out from the tradition of software development and lean design specifically being the approach that we take. And I'm going to use the TIPS project, which is our biggest current effort with those design groups, to elucidate some of the things that we've learned so far. So perinatal depression is common and serious. What we're talking about is depression during pregnancy and postpartum. Contrary to what most people think, it turns out that most women who have postpartum depression actually had it in pregnancy. There's not really such a thing as this postpartum depression separate from any other kind of depression, but that's a different talk. So we're interested in what's happening with care for women in pregnancy with depression. And as that transitions into postpartum, about 9 to 15% of women in pregnancy have major depression, and then a much larger percentage have elevated depression symptomatology, which wouldn't benefit from medications, but nonetheless is associated with preterm birth, for example, and low birth weight. Obstacles to delivery care, healthcare delivery include both health system and patient obstacles. Those are big categories, but they include the disruption, especially for low-income women, the disruption of usual care, where if they were getting care for depression, for example, that's disrupted. We showed several years ago that depression is an obstacle. It basically means that ongoing depression care for women receiving Medicaid goes away completely during the pregnancy period and doesn't really come back very well afterwards, unlike what we see in well-integrated health systems that care for privately insured women. There's a lack of training of healthcare providers. The obstetric teams generally are not trained to treat depression and perceive it as something outside of their domains. And there's poor implementation of highly evidence-based, team-based approaches to depression care in these settings where primary care in general is provided, but also in pregnancy care in particular. On the patient side, their attitudes toward depression care, they include stigma and preferences, which are not included in the review of what treatment options are. There's not very much awareness of the range of treatment options that go beyond intensive therapies like antidepressant medications and intensive psychotherapy, and their lack of resources to help with that. And finally, the ambiguity regarding the safety of the quotes gold standard for depression care or antidepressant medication and the potential for risk, although overall the evidence shows that there is no risk for most antidepressant medications. There is a concern about that, and ambiguity remains. So what is mHealth and depression care? What we mean by mHealth is mobile health. That's where the term came from. It actually is one of many terms that are used for the use of communication technologies to support the delivery of health services in one way or the other. For our purposes, you are interested in mHealth in large part because of the fact that low-income women who are receiving care for pregnancy, pretty much all have mobile phones and pretty much all have smartphones, which is an interesting fact, which is very different from folks who are a little bit older, the mean age of delivery in the U.S. is 24 for low-income groups. So that really means half of women are less than 24, and that really means that just about all of them are in that high utilization range for smartphones. So they're familiar with electronic media, so in addition to the fact that they have these smartphones, it's a really integral part of their lives, and it means that they're familiar with that medium, and they are willing and even expect to interact with the world through that medium. So we wanted to take advantage of that. It's also an opportunity to extend the reach of healthcare delivery where there are limited healthcare resources, the asynchronous communication where people can respond when they want to provides an opportunity to be patient-centered in the sense that people can we can go to them where they are rather than forcing them to come to us in the schedules that we present. So what about community partner participatory research? This is an area that, and I apologize for the smaller font here, but this is an area that developed within education and health, both two separate areas, but really started in education with participatory action research that moved into healthcare. It posits that that you want to have the presence of stakeholders from the very beginning, even conceptualizing your problems and moving forward together, where you have stakeholders as equal partners in the project. In our case, we're interested in stakeholders that include both the healthcare providers and the patients. So both of those stakeholder groups need to be involved with the researchers and the developers in order to have a successful product at the end. Lean software development is a area of software development that's very interesting and very much complements and emulates many of the principles of community partner participatory research, where the value of of stakeholder involvement, the folks who you want to produce the product for are involved all the way through and giving you feedback as you create prototypes. Some other features include eliminating waste and really focusing in on the minimum set of features that are needed to solve your solution and to create your solution, so features that are not necessarily considered waste. Amplifying learning includes this iterative review of prototypes that I just mentioned, and delaying critical decisions, not deciding on an approach that you're going to be locked into and make a big difference. If you decided to change it later, would make it would be a big cost, for example, or time cost. So delay those until you've really had a chance for your stakeholders to decide what they really need. Value stream mapping is another very interesting part of lean development, which is basically it comes from product development and lays out what currently exists from producing the product to getting it to the user and solving and creating a solution or having a solution. And then having what you have now and then going in and mapping out how you could solve this as a way of organizing your efforts. So we use those features for our own work. This is a visual representation of what we mean by this iterative feedback loop, where we have an initial development of a prototype, for example, which is presented to the development group. They use it, review it, have some thoughts about it. They provide that feedback to the developers, who then go back and revise them. And rapidly, in our case, we focus on one-month cycles, get a new prototype back to the design group so that they can tell us, what we've done wrong and what we need to do better altogether. So the design considerations include defining the specific problem that will be targeted. That clarity there is really critical. Human factors issues, what are the features of the particular design that will make it useful for the users? And again, the stakeholders in our particular case are both the care providers and the patients. And that human factors topic is really important, and the approach we've taken is that they should be different from the developers so that there isn't a conflict of interest, because it's sometimes harder to program something that is ideal, and you need someone really pushing for the better design so that they're not tired at night and deciding that it's not really necessary to do it. So anyway, we then need to also think about marketing this and fitting our particular solution into the workflow that currently exists, so that it solves problems that people value within this site, and doesn't just create new work. So by if we're going to put in a solution for depression, and they're not dealing with depression right now, then that's going to be more difficult to sell than if we incorporate that into a solution that solves some of the other work that they're currently trying to do and not doing so well. So the TIPS project, it stands for Technology to Improve Perinatal Services, is an effort by the two existing community partner participatory design groups, one of which is called the Spirit Group, and the other one is Circle for Moms. And Spirit, I'm afraid to say, I always have a hard time remembering what it stands for, but it has to do with the IT is interactive technology, and it has something to do with working together to improve outcomes in perineal depression with interactive technologies. But I like Spirit. That's easy for me to remember. And Circle for Moms is another one. These two groups have been working, one just since January of this year. That's the Spirit group, and the other has been since 2010. That's really where we developed our initial ideas. They both work in Medicaid predominant sites. They are patients, providers, and IT developers working from two sites, one of which is in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and one is which is in urban Philadelphia, downtown Philadelphia. One cares for primarily African American patients, and one for primarily Latina immigrant community. They include OBs and midwives, family physicians, a range of healthcare providers. You can see are part of our participatory group. We initially, as we moved forward with this project, we initially were focused on creating a system that would support the care management of depression because of the evidence that care management is really key to delivering depression care. But as the group worked together, we realized that there was an upstream problem that we needed to solve first, which was helping people understand what the choices were for depression care. Initially, so the group vetoed, actually changed course, our initial plan, and had us move to a new area, which was thinking about decision aids. This is a little photograph of some of our work group meetings. We meet at least monthly. The two groups are designed to be working on the project separately, and they work on their own, but then we have common video mediated group meetings across the two to make sure that there's communication across those two groups. We work with a bunch of pieces of paper taped to the wall to work out some of our prototype ideas. We're still at the stage where we haven't actually, we have created one app for patients dealing with suicide who are being released from a center that has, and with that because they were admitted for thoughts of suicide. That's called the My Game Plan app, which you can download if you're interested from the iTunes Store or whatever it is where you buy apps for the Apple products. This is our most current project, which is, again, as I said, the Decision Aid project. All right, so what are the different problems that we need to kind of address within the workflow, this value stream mapping? We know currently at these two sites that a woman comes in for prenatal care and registers and then is seen by a range of people, usually social workers and care managers of various kinds, before they see their prenatal provider, who then, if they identify the presence of depression, will refer them to mental health for mental health services. We know that that results in almost no one getting any care using that referral system. So the problems that we have below include the fact that we don't have any screening, we don't have systematic screening, we don't have enough time to complete the surveys that are that are delivered to people ahead of time. There's a lack of awareness of treatments. There's a lack of training of providers to deliver care, and few patients participate in the care. So our TIP solutions that we're working with now include using technology to implement an efficient two-stage screening protocol that we've used in other settings through paper-based approaches. A web-based survey to complete at home before people even come in for their prenatal visit to solve the not having enough time to complete the survey. A review of options for treatments through a decision aid that we're working on. And decision support for providers. So once a patient decides they want to follow a particular treatment plan, especially if the provider has never heard of that treatment before, we want to train them, but we want to give them some very specific things that they can do to move forward with that treatment. In the end, our goal is to support participatory decision making between the patients and providers as a result of that, of implementing that decision aid. What is exactly a decision support intervention? This is a very interesting area that I'm a relatively neophyte to. But decision support interventions there's a whole field involved with this, and there is now a big interest in that field in using electronic tools and incorporating that decision support into ongoing care. The goal, as I mentioned before, is to enhance participatory decision making, knowledge, and the quality of decisions, which is measured by a congruence between values that the patient has regarding treatment and how well that lines up with the actual treatment that they end up with at the end. This is a conceptual model from the Ottawa decision. It's called the Ottawa Decision Aid Framework. You have certain decision needs that can be measured by decision conflict, a set of values, knowledge, and expectations which may not match up with what actually treatments will actually provide. That decision support can come from counseling, decision tools, and coaching, and that results in decisions that can be measured by quality, their actions, and the impact of those decisions on actual care outcomes. So we went through a process of reviewing what evidence there was for treatments, and used a semi-systematic review, although we did rely on other systematic reviews that were done by other organizations. This is our list of selected treatments: watchful waiting, aerobic exercise, music therapy, bright light therapy, relaxation therapy, massage, home visiting, behavioral activation, carried out with a prenatal provider team, intensive psychotherapy, and antidepressant medications. We elicited a whole range of factors related to the ease of delivering those services, and we identified a number of things, including that would influence why someone might choose one over the other, including ease of use, stigma, familiarity with the treatments. For example, bright light therapy, although it's one of the best, most evidence-based treatments available, patients and providers, neither of them were aware of it, and so that created a big obstacle to people thinking that that would be worth having or using. So cost and provider factors also were identified as important factors. So we're going to translate those elicited treatment information as characteristics, factors, features into graphic text and video and audio formats. We're going to be implementing that into an electronic system which will be available to folks through smartphones and tablet computers is our goal, and that will be integrated to provide that information into electronic medical record within our health system. And this is an ongoing project, and I hope we'll be able to tell a bit more about that maybe next year. The project is funded through grants from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. And if anyone has questions, I hope we have a couple minutes.